Hello, and welcome to another episode of Point to Point on this beautiful New England day. It's the show where I try to get from one place to another, to the good old train station, and try to figure out what the hell I'm going to say. Good news, traffic seems light today, which is always a nice thing. So maybe this will be a short one. There's been a lot going on in the good old video game life the past couple days. I'm not sure if you saw the news, I'm sure that you didn't actually, that a recent gacha game released a couple of new characters that are based on the Divine Comedy. So, you know, Dante Alighieri's Inferno, which is probably the one that you know. Purgatory, and then Heaven, I think, is what the third one is called. It's all translations. I'm working on something to kind of talk about that, because I think it's really interesting that this is not the first instance of this, right? You look at something like American McGee's Alice being, you know, something that is promoting, or an adaptation, I guess, of some variety of another classic work, Alice in Wonderland. And then you look at, more recently, Metaphor Refantasio, one of the main characters in the, like, Velvet Room place, is Sir Thomas More, the author of Utopia. And that's an important part of that game. And it's interesting to me that is another, you know, people buying the classics, wanting to read the classics, using classic literature, or even, like, not even, like, you know, you wouldn't even, I don't think, refer to it as lit in that kind of way. But, like, just capital C classics. Being in games and being characters, or, like, people that you engage with. And then that having a knock-on effect of people purchasing books or interacting with that, like, different forms of that media. I think it's just, like, a pretty fascinating thing. But the thing that I'm working on is, you know, why is that? Is there other instances of it? Which I think there are. And then also, just kind of unfortunately, fortunately, and in, like, a dumb kind of way, that has now transformed into, I downloaded the Xbox 360 version of Dante's Inferno. Just, you know, really, really running the gamut of adaptations of Dante's Inferno, and what is that like, and why is that happening? I've talked about it a little bit on previous episodes about the power of the public domain as, like, means to take someone's, like, existing public domain works and then kind of retrofit that into an IP you can work with. It most recently was with the Tainted Grail King Arthur kind of Oblivion-like game. And I think that this is probably another instance of that. Like, you know, I can't remember who made Dante's Inferno, but you see the success of a God of War and you think, okay, well, what other pieces of classical mythology can we take and then kind of turn that into an IP? And it did not work for Dante's Inferno. I am excited to find out why that is and kind of how, you know, I know that it is not a faithful adaptation of that, but it's interesting to see that and then kind of reflect that onto something like Hades, which is still taking classical mythology in a way that is interesting and compelling, and kind of using these characters to tell a different story, and, you know, imbuing them with a little bit more character than maybe the actual classical text has. But weirdly, this episode is not about that. This episode is about how I had downloaded Dante's Inferno. I was going to play it, and then I got a little weak-kneed about that, because the main Xbox in the house where I play console games is in our living room, And I know a little bit about what's going on with Dante's Inferno, and that's not going to be a fun time for my wife and I, who sit on the couch, to have going on in the background. So I was like, okay, we'll do this a different time. I'll boot up Clair Obscur, see what that's all about. I've been meaning to get to it for a really long time, and surprise, this episode is also not about Clair Obscur. That game had a huge update, and I was like, okay, let's go next in line. And I booted up South of Midnight, and there is a through line here. The through line is, I really thought that I would super love South of Midnight. The style to it, the kind of like the aesthetics, the type of game it is, and kind of telling one of those Southern Gothic stories that I feel like we still don't get a ton of, all is really compelling to me. I probably spent about an hour and a half playing South of Midnight right now. I have not met the big fish nor the giant alligator. I have seen one spooky giant creature and kind of done the combat like six or seven times. And I'm going to front load the good here, because I think there is some good stuff in South of Midnight. First and foremost, I do like the Southern Gothic part of this. It is cool to like actually navigate a kind of like, I guess I don't know where it is actually based, but a very like Louisiana Creole style background that I definitely don't have enough cultural understanding of, as like a kid who grew up in Wisconsin, and my greatest exposure to any of this stuff is very, very poorly written uses of Gambit. That is my main interaction with this part of Louisiana. So it's, I think that part is interesting. The other part that I do actually enjoy is the story seems to be pretty good so far. It's at least enjoyable, which is nice. The whole thing is about how there are these weavers who kind of fix the great tapestry of time and everything, and they end up, They fix this tapestry, and it's like a passed down mythical group of people who understand the magic of all of that stuff, which I think it's you know, neat, pretty classic stuff, but pretty good. And then there's some obviously family drama. You're an 18-year-old girl who's a track star, which is a great way to explain why you're able to sprint everywhere. I appreciate that. And you get into a fight with your mom during a hurricane. The trailer that your mom lives in floats on down the river. You try to catch her, and then you have to go back to your estranged grandmother, I guess, whose name is Bunny, which is unfortunate. There's a lot of bunny symbolism, like rabbit symbolism, in the storybook concept of the whole thing. So I think that there's something there, but I don't know. It's a game that is very complicated in how I feel about it, because I just generally think that it is not, it's very PS2. Like, it feels like a version of the Dante's Inferno game that just doesn't really work for me. The combat is kind of bad. I knew it was going to be bad. It's worse than I thought. And making it easy is not also making it easy. So, I don't know. I will come back and chit-chat a little bit more about this. I am running late because schedules have changed. I'll have more to say about South of Midnight tomorrow. But until then, see you later. Thanks for hanging out, and adios. Surprise! It's a late addition to this episode of Point to Point. I was listening back to the episode I recorded earlier today when I was on the way to the train, and I wasn't happy with how it ended. So I kind of want to spend a couple more minutes talking about South of Midnight, kind of how I feel about it, and I feel like I kind of rushed the end there. So let's kind of take a step back and just kind of talk through what's going on in South of Midnight that is working for me and what isn't really working for me and why that is. The first bit is, I think South of Midnight, story-wise, is interesting. There's this story metaphor that I mentioned earlier that is like storybookish, I guess, in some degree. There's the book of South of Midnight in the opening cinematic, and then you have like a narrator who's kind of stepping you through the story as it's happening. I love me a frame tale, so I'm not mad about it. And I can tell that they're doing some other stuff with it already. Like I mentioned, the bunny character being named Bunny, and then seeing a lot of rabbit iconography in that frame tale. There's also just generally a big animal thing going on there. I think that the first big monster that I mentioned that I saw was like a big praying mantis, kind of. So there's stuff going on there that I think is something that I'll be able to latch onto when I go back to it. That said, and I guess a little bit further than that, you play through the game and the beginning of it is kind of it's incredibly linear. Like the game itself, I think, is going to end up being very linear, which is not necessarily a problem. The part that's kind of rubbing up against me right now is I'm in the, I guess I would call it the skill acquisition thing. And it's like, man, it's one after another after another. You pick up a new power and there's stuff there to do. And it's like a little obnoxious. So we'll see how that part goes. There's interesting stuff in there that because you're playing as a young black woman in the South, you know, guess what? There's going to be stuff in there. Like, I think it was less than probably 45 minutes into the game, and you are already visiting the sleeping, you know, quote unquote quarters of a slave, of a plantation with slaves. And there's story about that. And I really appreciate that. I feel like that's a part of that is a part of American history that we don't get to talk about. Like, you end up following around, a previous weaver, which is what your magic doin type of character is called, and you follow around a previous weaver in like the early 1800s who's helping a family of slaves escape. And you're kind of learning your power set through watching this ghostly image of a previous weaver kind of do stuff. And that part's awesome. Like that's the stuff that I really like in this game so far. You know, it's an interesting way to look at the world with kind of the magical realism going on. I think the story bits are kind of cool. The part where it all falls apart is kind of what I mentioned before, where the combat is not great. It's like a very light upgrade tree based kind of Arkham Asylum mash or hold X to do different things. You know, you got your dodge, you can lock on. There's like a couple of magic powers that you can do that's basically push, pull, and web someone up to kind of like restrict them a bit. And the enemy variety, at least from what I've seen, is non-existent. I'm sure that there is more. I know that there are boss battles in this game. And it's mostly just hit square and then you walk in. When people talk about the combat of this game, I think it's kind of hard to imagine what it is without actually seeing it. So it's very easy to think of like, yes, it's the push X kind of thing, which I think would be fine if you're kind of like exploring this area and then enemies are there. But I think the part that it makes it not great in my eyes is that instead of there being a lot of, you know, just random enemies that you can run into or, you know, challenge enemies that you kind of go to. It's not like God of War, the 2018 God of War, right? Like, you're not just wandering around and there are enemies there. You are wandering around, you're getting your story, you're getting your new powers, and then you are entering a place that has red pustules in the environment, and this is now a boss arena. and you will see like four enemies appear, and then you will fight them, and then you will go to the object in the center and you unravel it, and then that makes the enemy, like, that makes the pustules disappear and combat is over. And it's this, I think that's the part that is troublesome to me, is that the combat in the game is, it's restricted. Like, you are, here's the story part, and now here's the part where you fight things. But the things that you are fighting are not, like, culminations of the story pieces that you found. They're just faceless, you know, they're, like, swirly, scary guys who have a red heart to them. You know, they're not, like, these are not manifestations of the plantation owners. They are supposed to be, you know, manifestations of all of the sorrow in this area. But that's kind of it. So I think that that's the part where the combat is there to kind of pace out the game. It's not there to reinforce the message of what you're doing in, like, an extremely obvious or meaningful way. Like, they kind of back their way into making it meaningful, but it's not, like, hugely meaningful. And I think that's the part where, like, I can tolerate the Batman style combat. It's the part where I feel like I'm doing the Batman style combat and not getting anything out of it, like, narratively or even, like, emotionally. That's more of where I am at with South of Midnight. I will continue playing it because I think it's really fun to kind of go around and see what the story is. I think that it's an important, you know, it's an important different kind of story that isn't here's medieval fantasy again. So I'd like to see some more of it. I guess, like, one last thing. I wish that they did they're doing the Animate on the Twos thing from Into the Spider-Verse, and it's only on the character. It doesn't seem to be on the enemies. Or the environment, and I just really wish that they would have went all the way with it. Like, you should have the flowers swaying like that just as much, or, like, the trees moving in the wind. Like, there's a lot of hurricane stuff going on, and having characters that look like they belong in high-res Coraline, doing stop-motion style movement is really cool, but in practice, there's not enough of it. I just wish that they would pick one or the other. And you can turn that off, but I don't know. Like, that also feels bad. So, yeah, that's South of Midnight. I'll have more thoughts on it as I pick my way through it. We'll see how long I stick with it. But I really, really wanted this to be the 7 out of 10 game that is a 9 out of 10 for me. And it's really looking like a 7 out of 10. And that's unfortunate for me. But yeah, thanks for hanging out on this afternoon edition of Point to Point. Thanks for being here for the record scratch moment. And go visit the site, join the Discord, hang out on Blue Sky, shout at me if there's more to South of Midnight that I'm missing. Otherwise, I'll talk to you tomorrow. All right, see ya for real this time.